Hello and welcome to the first official Tiny Echo, the inconceivably nerdy young adults of Central Ohio podcast. I am Scott Lansky.
And I am Jonathan Halper.
And we are here to share with our fellow Central Ohioans all the various nerdy, geeky, whatever appellation you wish to use to describe yourself, happenings in and around our great city.
And Central Ohio, I have to say, makes so much more sense. Because I've been just saying Columbus, and I thought it was kind of like a cheat. But Central Ohio is a lot better.
It really is, because a lot of what we do doesn't just happen in the city. And we get out and about, and there's a lot of folks who come in to attend events who live nowhere near the city outskirts, even.
That's something we want to encourage, wink, wink.
Absolutely, yeah. And that goes for anybody who's living elsewhere and hears this podcast and wants to check it out and check out Columbus, because we've got a really good city right here. Especially for the geek or nerd. There's a lot of stuff to check out. For our part, Tiny Echo, we do a lot of events themed around board games, science fiction and fantasy, and basically just doing everyday sort of social activities with like-minded people. You know, we might go bowling, or we might do axe throwing, or go to a bar and have a drink, but the point is that the folks you're doing those events with have a lot of common interests. And that's what makes the group so much fun. Obviously, the zeitgeist is the geek and nerd culture is very, very popular right now. And as a result, more folks are comfortable in describing themselves in those terms.
Yes.
And media, obviously, responds really well to that, because if you look at a lot of stuff coming out, it's got either direct science fiction and fantasy influences, or it's tainted by them.
Very true. Foundation is coming out this month.
Oh, it's this month, all right? On Apple TV.
Yeah, Apple TV. That's going to be pretty great. Apple's getting into that whole... That's their particular foothold in the genre. Hopefully it works out well for them. And just in case anyone out there hasn't heard of axe throwing as a sport, that's not just something that we made up. We're not that hardcore. That there are rules and regulations and lanes. So,
yes,
and not to give you the wrong impression.
And safety cages. Yes, this is all true. That's a good point. There are axe throwing bars, which, on the face of it, sounds like a terribly dangerous idea, but you know. They keep injuries to a minimum, and they don't really let people drink to excess, at least from what I've seen.
And so, there have probably been, like, no deaths.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
Probably.
So I think that might give us a good segue into our next segment, which is the events coming up in Tiny Echo. Every month, we have a Brews and Board Games Night at the Forge Tavern, one of our favorite watering holes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's on a Friday night, generally, from 7 or 7:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. And the Forge itself has a fantastic library of board games, as well as a really great drinks menu, cocktails with fantasy themes, excellent craft beer, both on tap and in bottles and cans. And they even have wine. Oh, and let's not forget one of the most outstanding aspects, the mead. They have partnered with Brothers Drake, a local meadery here in town, to provide their customers with some of the finest mead in, I think, anywhere.
And on top of that, they sometimes venture into just kind of independent selling ventures. Like they've sold handmade soap before.
Yeah.
So it's just those cool little touches that really do make it feel like the place to go.
For sure. And they have a good menu that's very much a step up from bar food. It's definitely worth, you know, a full night out. You don't have to go somewhere and have dinner and then go to the Forge. You can get everything in one place. And so you should look for us there about once a month or so. And then we're also going to be attending Oktoberfest, which is Columbus's huge event celebrating the German culture, especially when it comes to drinking, polka music, and bratwursts, and of course Schmidt's restaurant, famous jumbo cream puffs.
And that's going to be on September 11th, which is in the future from when we're recording this, but it, by the time you see this, it will have passed. But it is something that happens every year.
That's correct. It does. And kind of, I don't know, in honor of Oktoberfest, we're currently drinking from the Brew Kettle, which is an Ohio craft brewery, their version of an Oktoberfest beer. And it's a good take on that particular style.
Like most Oktoberfests, well, it's actually, I didn't read this right, it's Oktoberfest.
Yes.
Decided to mess with it a little bit.
Yeah.
It is a, if you're a Miller Lite, Bud Light person, then this is a, and you want to get into potentially more complex beers, this is a great step in that direction. It's fairly similar to those lighter lagers, but with a couple of other notes that get you an idea of what different kinds of beers would taste like.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a very easy drinking beer. To go along with that, on Sunday, Jonathan, I believe you are hosting an event.
I am. It's a bit of a smaller one, a little more modest. It's at Edison Brewing. That is in Gahanna on 785 Science Boulevard. It has an excellent outdoor area. You can see from the back porch, which is pretty big, you can see the Columbus cityscape, which it's a great location for them. There's even a field beyond where, if there's nothing else going on, I think they have families out there playing and stuff. And then they do have regular food trucks as well. It's happening / happened on September 12th, but it's not going to be the last time that we do something there. So that is just one example of one of the smaller events that we do that, as Scott said earlier, is focused on delivering shared experiences that might not be nerdy in nature, but that bring these like-minded people together.
Absolutely. And then, do you have a favorite Edison brew? Like, is there a beer that you like there?
I can't. I've actually only been... It's pretty new. I've only been there once, and so I don't have a lot of experiences there. So we'll just have to see what the next visit brings.
What did you try when you were there?
Let me see. I went at the same time as... or the same day as a different brewery, so I might be mixing it up here. But I think I had a citrusy wheat of some kind, but I would not be able to remember more than that. Maybe if I saw the name.
Yeah. Fair enough. On Wednesday, coming up, I host a mini paint club at the Tabletop Game Cafe, which is another excellent location in our awesome city.
And that's every week as well, right?
That is every week, every Wednesday. Some Wednesdays, I know I have other things going on, but I do try to schedule it multiple Wednesdays a month. And it starts at 7:30 p.m. and goes to 11 p.m. And the location is 4316 North High Street. If you're just kind of casually looking around and wondering how to find us, just look for the Table of Painters. And on some of those same nights, one of the managers there, Pat, will also host a miniatures war game called Infinity. And he'll probably be playing with other people, but he's also willing to just talk about it and answer questions to those interested. So it's a good time to come practice your craft, just meet other painters, check out what other folks are up to. And then on Thursday night,
we've got at the Forge as well. Most Thursdays, well, I don't know about most, but many Thursdays, they have a trivia night at 8. At 8, they do a general trivia thing, and then it goes into whatever their theme of the week is. In the case of September 16th, it is Dragon Ball Z. And again, that if you just want to go for that, that starts at 9. There's an outside chance you hear this before that happens, but not sure. And the trivia happens in a couple of different formats. You download an app and you might click like the first letter of the answer, or you also might be a buzzer type scenario where you hit it and you have to say the answer fast, so it's like more of a speed game. But it goes back and forth between those two models.
Yeah, and speaking of experience, we both have seen games where we were certain we had pressed that buzzer first, and all of a sudden, no, another team got there ahead of us. So
like, that is not physically possible.
Yeah.
Okay, mutants.
Yeah. Or in the case of Harry Potter trivia night, maybe they cast, what's a spell in Harry Potter that makes you fast?
Something.
Yeah.
Rapidus something.
There you go. But it's a good time. And there's always a little trophy you get for winning the trivia. And then one of the other prizes is you get, I think, your drinks comped, or at least you get a drink ticket towards your purchase.
Yeah.
And then there's a separate, if I'm not mistaken, it's separate, the general knowledge trivia from 8 to 9. They have their own trophy for that and like the drinks prize.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So Thursday night, every Thursday they do, and almost every time it's got like a sci-fi or fantasy or, you know, quote unquote geek theme as well. So.
And then you've got a, well, not you, but one of our members has a board game.
Yes. Our organizer, Matt Storrs, has started running the bi-weekly board game extravaganza. And these take place on a Saturday or a Sunday. Generally, they are at 12:30 or 1 p.m. And they take place at different libraries around Columbus. A couple of them have been at the Whetstone branch on High Street. But this next one, on Saturday, September 18th, is at Upper Arlington Public Library, which is at 2800 Tremont Road in Upper Arlington, Ohio. It says they will be in Meeting Room B. The meeting room is located on the lower level of the main library, and I'm sure you can go there and ask where the board gamers are meeting. So that should be a good time. That should be a good early afternoon event.
And then a week later, at 1 p.m., we're going to go apple picking. That is headed by our very own Sophie Halter. This will be at the Lind Fruit Farm. That is on 9090 Morse Road, Southwest. I'm not sure where on Morse Road that is. Morse Road's a very long road.
Mm-hmm.
But it is likely outside of the loop, if I had to guess. That's the 270 loop. And essentially, I mean, we have specific apples that we're looking at. It looks like a Macintosh, Honeycrisp, Fuji, yeah, and Golden Delicious, just to talk about some of the most well-known ones. And there will be Apple Cannons, which I have never used, but they sound like a ton of fun.
I am stoked for those, yeah, absolutely. And, or should I say absolutely? No, I shouldn't. I should not have said that.
And then bags are $25 for 10 pounds of Honeycrisp, $20 for 10 pounds of anything else. And if, so if you're into that... the outdoor fall stuff, we are kicking that genre of activities off with that one.
And that, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And then probably the biggest news of September, if you're into board gaming, is the Origins Expo is happening again this year in person. September 30th to October 3rd. It is at the 400 North High Street, the Columbus Convention Center. And this event has, over the years, like hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have come through the doors to celebrate all things board gaming. And we're going to discuss Origins more later in a special segment. But I will say now that if you want to know... Thursday, the first day this year, is going to be completely free. So if you're just interested in checking it out, not sure if it's for you, that's a great day to go ahead and just come in and see what it's like. And then that Friday evening, October 1st, I will be attending a metal show at Ace of Cups, which is a great show space at 2619 North High Street, Columbus, Ohio. The headliners are Howling Giant with Horseburner and Valley of the Sun. After spending Saturday at Origins Game Fair, you can join me for this psychedelic stoner doom metal show. The headliners, Howling Giant, play D&D inspired, yes, really, psych metal in the style of bands like Pelican, Isis, and Mastodon, and hail from Nashville, Tennessee. Horseburner plays, as they call it, heavy stoner metal, and hail from Parkersburg, West Virginia. Some of their stuff reminds me of early Baroness or Kailessa with male vocals, in the case of Kailessa. So it's sludgy with plenty of those great Invisible Orange moments that if you're into metal, you know. And last but not least, Cincinnati, Ohio's own Valley of the Sun. They're like a fuzzy stoner rock band, but with a straight-ahead style reminiscent of Truck Fighters and Red Fang. So I'm looking forward to this show. It's as usual for a lot of shows at Ace of Cups, it's really, really reasonably priced. It's $10 in advance or $12 at the door. And as a lot of venues have started doing in Columbus, they will be checking for vaccination status cards or pictures of them at the door. So it's a 21 and over show, and tickets are already on sale. They started on Friday, July 30th at 10 a.m., and you can get those at eventbrite.com and aceofcupsbar.com. So that's what we've got going for the rest of the month.
Yep.
And yeah, that's a lot of stuff on our calendar.
Yep. We are keeping on, keeping on. In September, even as COVID surges, do be aware that if you are coming in from outside Columbus, that they are putting in a mask mandate that will be in effect. So that will be for all indoor activities. It's just something to be aware of if you are traveling or just getting out of the house after a while. Mm-hmm. I get that. So, speaking of the forges we were earlier, right down the road from that is a place called Brush Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This is a place where you can paint and craft a number of different things. You can paint on canvas, you can paint ready-made ceramics with glazed or acrylic paint. I have recently painted a
TARDIS there, and Doctor Who police box. And that is usually it's they're not official meetup events per se, but they are unofficially led by John Plappert most of the time. That's one of our members who goes very frequently. And this is one of three studio locations in the country. So it's a bit of a chain, but not really. It's like a franchise location. The one in Columbus is owned by Lisa Laughlin and Lori Griffin, who are just looking to foster creativity and artful living in the community. Lisa came from CCAD, the Columbus College of Art and Design, and Lori is focused on encouraging people who struggle with self-doubt and worry about their artistic skills, and it's just a very welcoming, easy to lounge at and just paint type place. What you do is, if you want to work on a project, once you start it, you pay for it, whether that be the ceramic object or I would assume the piece of canvas that you're working on. I haven't done that yet. And then as long as you're working on that, there are no further costs with attendance. You just go and you work on your project for however long that you like. So it's low pressure in that regard, and I like that very much.
I really enjoyed my time there too. I painted a little owl mug that I've turned into a planter, because I have enough mugs, but I really like the idea of using it to grow something in.
And yeah, as you were saying earlier, it's a very welcoming space. There's no sense of like elitist art, pretentious art crowd, you know. And yeah, quite a few of our members have really, really fell in love with it. I know you've gone like two weekends in a row with your roommate Jordan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Well, I don't know about in a row, but I have gone three times. I've finished up that TARDIS, and now I'm working on just a pencil holder type thing. Nice. I like to make things that I know I'm going to use, so that I'm not just like cluttering up my space with random things.
Yeah, I'm same boat right here.
And if you're asking how I'm going to use the TARDIS, it's because it's a bank. It's a coin bank.
I mean, I thought you were just going to, you know, use it as a TARDIS, but a bank's fine.
Hopefully it is bigger on the inside.
I mean, yeah, let's assume as much. And I still really have to say, I really appreciate the fact that you actually got the TARDIS blue. You know, the proper color, TARDIS blue, you managed to find it, and it's exact.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
I think that's great.
That was like 75% navy and 25% violet.
You heard it here, folks. TARDIS blue. If you ever want to paint your room or your baby's bassinet or something, 75, what was it again?
75% thereabouts of navy and 25% violet.
Awesome. I think you just made a bunch of people very happy. Yeah. Or maybe it's already a well-known fact.
Maybe.
<Who knows>? probably. But yeah, that's a really great location. And as you said, it's literally in the same block as the Forge Tavern. And in fact, the owners of Brush Crazy and the Forge are friendly and attend each other's events. And it's another great sign for me that Columbus really has that nice, like, small town but big city feel. That people support each other and they are into what other folks are doing, which is a good way for me to start talking about the beloved Forge Tavern. So this place opened in 2019, and it was opened in response to the previous location owned by Diane and Bruce Langdon, the Orcs Forge gaming store. And this was a Tuttle Mall. And one of the reasons that they opened the Forge Tavern is because a lot of people would go and play games there at the game store and say, oh, I really wish I could have a drink while I'm gaming. And they decided that the Tunnel Mall location wasn't really working out as well as they had hoped. And then apparently they saw an offer on this space at Bethel Road and went for it. And they opened in 2019, did great for a while. And then, of course, the pandemic hit, and that took a huge toll. But they made it through thanks to the supportive community around them. You had mentioned the soap making earlier. That was one of the ways that Diane found to get through the pandemic was by making and selling soap. She also sold handmade masks, or her COVID masks. They did food specials and drink specials, you know, for carryout. She made dice mats and dice bags, which a lot of which they still sell there. And of course, they also made money by selling board games, card games, or role-playing games, which they still do now. And even though that's not really the focus anymore, it's much more about the board gaming experience and the bar experience. They do still have a very sizable part of their space dedicated to selling all those products that gamers are looking for. So if you're ever in the mood to buy a set of dice and have a really good craft beer, the Forge is your answer. So I love going there. A lot of people, the first time they go in, they're enthralled because the decor is also a standout. What they've gone for is sort of like a medieval or Renaissance aesthetic. They have suits of armor, they've got portraits of different nobles and knights on the walls, they have cross swords.
Mythical creatures,
absolutely. They have like a pirate ship, a really, really large, nice model of a pirate ship. And one of my other favorite things about the place that I always get a kick out of is every time I've been there, Bruce, Diane's partner, goes through and will try to find on TV whatever sci-fi or fantasy or kind of geeky show or movie is on and have those on the TVs.
Right.
Which I just enjoy that. That's the feel. Instead of going there and seeing like football, you know, or some other sporting event, it's like, oh, look, they're playing Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, and maybe there's like a Futurama episode or Simpsons or something on.
They are very good at cultivating the mood of their space.
Absolutely, yes.
In a number of different ways.
Yeah. And they're just some of the kindest people. They are just a really, really warm and lovely when it comes to people who come in. They want people to feel like it's a home away from home, and that's exactly the feeling you get at the Forge Tavern. So I hope that they're here for many, many years to come.
And I hope the same. It's a great watering hole.
Absolutely.
Now we are going to go into our book segment. We are some readers here.
Indeed. Indeed we are. And in fact, I don't know if you feel like plugging your other podcast, John, but I'm happy if you wish to.
May look better on me if you since you brought that up first.
All right.
Yes, I also run a podcast with Johnny Andrewski called The Acolytes of Merlin. We are a nerdy podcast as well, but we focus specifically on science fiction and fantasy. I'll say media. It's most often books, only TV and movies as the occasion allows for. We'll be talking about the Dune movie. We'll be talking about the Wheel of Time show that's coming out on Amazon in November. For the most part, our format is that we will just do 1, 2, 3 episodes, depending on the length of the book, and just talk about that book. And more often than not, we've done super long series like The Wheel of Time, so that's taking us quite a bit. But yeah, check us out if you want. We're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. Again, that's Acolytes of Merlin.
Awesome. Yeah, and as a listener, I enjoy it. I've enjoyed the episode I've listened to. You know, I feel like there's a lot of podcasts for a lot of subjects, but, you know, the more podcasts about sci-fi and fantasy literature, the better.
Right.
So thank you for sharing that with us, John. And that leads us into our discussion on our most recent monthly book club choice for Tiny Echo, which was the book Frankenstein in Baghdad, an Arabic novel written by the Iraqi writer Ahmed Sadawi. And the way that our book club works is one month, one person in the book club who's been a regular attendee selects three titles, and then we all vote on one of those titles and go ahead and then spend the next month reading, and then we meet in person during the week sometime, usually at a restaurant somewhere. We can have a nice dinner and talk about the book.
Right.
So this was a really interesting choice. It wasn't what I would consider typical sci-fi or fantasy fare. It was very much like magical realism.
Absolutely. It wasn't hard sci-fi. It wasn't sci-fi at all, because it's mystical in the few elements that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not high fantasy. It's magical realism in the sense that it takes one element of something that could not happen and then just puts it in the midst of things that absolutely could and in many cases did.
Yeah. So as folks might imagine, the book was indeed written about the Iraq War, and particularly the U.S. occupation of Iraq following that war, which makes it a very, very mature novel, and one that, for certain people, just generationally, I feel like some folks might have more of a reaction to it. Like, it might hit some folks differently than others. I think as somebody who grew up, you know, I'm 39, and I definitely remember what it was like living through those days. I don't want to get too political, but I remember going to protest the Iraq War when I was younger, and hearing about the, you know, the things being done over there. And so I was really interested in how that was going to come into play in this story, how the everyday situation in Iraq was portrayed.
Yeah. And I don't pretend to know a heck of a lot of how it was and how it wasn't. I was not in a position to go into protests at the time. I did get a sense of authenticity from the book, and it didn't feel as though it were really pushing anything. It wasn't making anyone in particular to be the bad guy. It was just a really awful environment to be in. And the way in which it so casually deals with violence is really important, because it makes it seem almost pedestrian in the world. Especially with the one mystical element, which I don't know if we want to get into that or if it's best to give people the chance to experience it on their own.
Well, I don't think it would be giving too much away to say that the title comes from the fact that one of the main characters is essentially a version of Frankenstein's monster.
Yes.
It's... this character collects body parts of suicide bomb victims and basically tries to build a living being from them.
Yeah.
Just
to be clear, I am a huge fan of the novel Frankenstein.
Yeah, same.
I understand that Victor Frankenstein is not in Baghdad. He's not the person. But my feeling is that Frankenstein's monster in Baghdad just didn't have a ring to it.
You know,
especially maybe in its original language.
That's a really good point. Clearly this is an example of this of the title referencing that book, but not referring directly to the creature. It's another example, I think, of the layering that takes place. There's a lot of irony in the story. One of the things I found ironic was there is a character in the book who is an Iraqi citizen, and yet they pray to an image of St. George. St. George, of course, as some folks probably know, the patron saint of England. And England is one of the coalition partners in the Iraqi war with the United States. So the fact that this woman, in some ways, is praying to the image of one of the countries that invaded her country was interesting and, like, obviously, like, the definition of irony. Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say, like, she has this element of this culture that has kind of left its mark in this part of the world in a way where it's not necessarily easy to tell what is and isn't original of the original culture in that place anymore. And that's also a minor thing with the monster and what it is to be an Iraqi citizen that also comes into play. But it's also not necessarily saying, oh, darn, it's a shame that she's praying to this patron saint of a different religion or a religion that you wouldn't expect. It's very much played out as this is what she had come across. It might not have ever mattered what exactly she put her faith in. It was just there.
Yeah. That's a good point. Because that's the other thing about the book. It reminds folks that there are multiple people of all kinds of folks, all kinds of faiths. We meet Christians like her. We meet Muslims. We meet Jewish people, obviously. We meet atheists and agnostics. And in fact, one of the major components of the story, like you were saying about that culture and, you know, where it comes from, is that there are Jewish ruins that almost become a character in themselves because of how they get utilized in the story. I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a lot of emphasis on the way in which these, in some ways disparate, but in a lot of other ways, very, very similar cultures come together. And that they're all basically going through the same horrible situation. They're living through warfare. They're living through the aftermath of warfare. Yeah. And one thing I liked about the story was how, obviously, it's about the pointlessness of war. Just the fact that no matter how many people end up getting killed, that doesn't really solve a lot of the problems that are going on. And that there are always more folks willing to do the dirty work for what they think is their just cause. And a lot of stories tell that, you know, and a lot of stories do that in a way that's palatable. Mm-hmm. But I think this story did it in a way in which it really reminds people, like, you know, it's not some faraway battle in space. This is happening right now in our world. because of decisions made by people that we can look at on TV and acknowledge that they were elected by people like us, which...
And they even had... They didn't have an elected official in the book, but there was a scene where they did have someone, I think, from Iraq who made a name for himself by appearing polished on the news. I hope I'm remembering that right.
No, you're absolutely right, yeah.
And that was kind of his whole thing, is that he was the talking head that was needed by the right people.
Yeah. And that he was also an ironic character, because if you remember, he would say things like, well, you know, we didn't catch this suicide bomber, but we caught the 10 other ones that might have succeeded. You know, it was more about the quantity, and you know, the fact that you should be proud of the fact that we accomplished something,
right?
Which is cold comfort to those victims and their families.
His whole thing is about spinning the situation,
yep,
in any way that can be advantageous.
Absolutely. So I think overall, everyone who read the book kind of treated it more as like, almost like a meditation on warfare.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anybody who really loved it, because it was hard to love something that was, in some ways, such an intimate portrayal of the destruction that humans do to one another. But that being said, it was certainly a book I'm glad I've read. I don't know, how would you sum up your experience with it?
It was definitely something, the kind of book to sit back and absorb and contemplate. It certainly wasn't a fun book. The monster is a pretty effective analogy for the recursive nature of violence and revenge.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that and thought it worked very well. There's a scene where everything kind of starts to come apart at the seams for him. Gosh, no pun intended. Yeah. Wow, no pun intended. Seriously.
Oh, that was well played.
It was good though. and is really, really good, because it just, I don't want to talk too much about it, it just made so much sense that it would happen that way. So I would recommend it. Admittedly, I did not finish it. That wasn't because of lack of interest. I just got caught up in other things. But what the 70% that I did read, I would absolutely recommend.
And I would say you should definitely finish it, because I think you'll really appreciate the ending. I feel like we could talk about it a lot more. But I don't want to give too much away, and I don't want people to, feel like they don't need to read it based on what we said, but it's worth reading, and it's definitely, a book that I am glad, as I said before, I'm glad that I got a chance to read. And that will take us to our final segment, in which we'll be discussing a major event taking place in Columbus that will be of special interest to lots of folks who may be listening to this podcast, and that is the aforementioned Origins Game Fair. So Origins is one of those events similar to Gen Con, which takes place in Indianapolis, or Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, which sees thousands of attendees for the 3 to 4 day period coming in to enjoy, in this case especially, the focus is on tabletop gaming, like board gaming, role-playing games, war games, but...
That's the case with Gen Con too, isn't it?
Yes, that is. But Gen Con, I think, is more about, like, role-playing games.
Okay.
Because originally it was started by the TSR, who are the original publishers of Dungeons & Dragons. The company, in fact, the company was started by
Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson, the D&D inventors. But Origins is primarily focused on board and war games. There is, of course, obviously a huge crossover with RPGs. But the overall attendance are for people who want to discover new board games or chance to play ones they haven't played before, that they've maybe had on their to playlist for a long, long time. And there's also, you know, the usual artists and authors that come to these conventions. There are comedy shows, art expo, costume contests, of course, like all these sorts of cons have. There's a film festival this year with over 50 science fiction and fantasy films being shown. There's an anime area, if that's your thing. And as I said before, the Thursday, September 30th, the first day is free, which I think they're doing that just because there wasn't one last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really awesome way to get people in the door and to show that it's primarily a big... just a big game room for people to come and play.
I was hesitant when you compared it to, you know, brought Dragon Con into that group. I guess I didn't realize that Origins went so far beyond the game.
Yeah, like,
I mean, it doesn't have everything like that, but you say it has anime and movies and...
Yep.
All that other stuff.
Cosplay is a big deal there. Like I said, there's a costume contest. They bring in... I think this year one of the special guests is a woman who is like a well-known cosplay personality. There's an art expo, which has all sorts of fantasy and science fiction artwork. Some of them from games, some of them just... various artists who are exhibiting each year. And there is also a large room dedicated to the Origins War College.
What's that?
That is an event that takes place. And it is basically the Origins University and War College. And it says here, games allow us to represent conflict and competition in real and imagined worlds where we can make decisions and see their consequences.
Hmm.
The War College is where those of the level of these real and imagined worlds come together to share what they have learned via gaming. Past presentations range from how to design games to historical military campaigns... how fantasy and science fiction impact society.
So,
it invites people
panels.
To, yeah, panels.
Okay,
exactly.
That's a cool name for them.
Yeah, and it tells people to come and enjoy the presentations and participate in civil discussions as we all try to better understand the world around us. So there's also a full game, which is NSDMG. And it says it's an intense, face-to-face, immersive, multiplayer seminar game. Players represent large social, industrial, political, and military groups in real-world nations experiencing major domestic and international challenges, where their interactions / negotiations with others drive world-changing events. It's a non-profit volunteer organization devoted to expanding understanding of how the world works. Their team includes specialists in finance, international military affairs, IT, and wargaming to provide challenges modeled on the real world. And this year, they're celebrating their 30th Origins Game Fair. Now, I have attended this in the past. And I have often enjoyed the stuff I've seen there. I remember it's where I found out about some games that have since become... some of my favorite, like, strategic board games. They've also discussed things like hard science fiction and physics and what would work in the real world versus how we see things happening in our favorite franchises.
So they draw parallels between the two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, often. And they also talk about their own experiences. Like I said before, they bring in people from all over. And a lot of the folks who've come in have military experience, either analysts or are themselves former military members.
That has a lot of science fiction and fantasy applications.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it's a really interesting series they do, and I didn't know it existed until some of the more recent Origins conventions. And it happens every day of the convention, Friday through Sunday. So there's all sorts of things for all sorts of gamers. And they have video game sections as well for people. Because, you know, they understand that gaming happens on all kinds of platforms, whether it's tabletop or a digital tabletop or an iPhone, for instance. Mm-hmm. So they've embraced it all. And industry-wide, you know, I don't know if you've played any of these yet, but there are a lot of board games now that even have a component for your phone, like a smartphone, just because sometimes it's easier to get information that way. And it cuts down on paper or other material. One of the best examples of how technology has merged with tabletop gaming is the D&D Beyond app and website. D&D Beyond is something that came out with the 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons, and it lets you create a character, keep track of all their stats, their spells, or their spellcaster, basically, like, everything you need on your phone. And it's nice. It's a good tool. And there's lots of tools for DMs, too, or Dungeon Masters, for that stuff, too. So, they've definitely done a good job of combining those two worlds.
I have done a total of one D&D campaign, and I only did pen and paper, even though there were one or two people in my group that were using a tablet. And I'm probably not going to do the way that I did it again. It was such a pain to keep track of and to update and everything. I feel much better if I had it on a tablet or a phone.
I tend to be old school about it. I like having paper at my fingertips to write things down.
Well, if you've taken the time to hone that over a long period of time, then that's understandable.
Yeah, although there are plenty of folks in my generation of D&D who jumped completely into the having everything on the computer. And I use that too. It's definitely great that there's so many options now for gaming online. Like Roll20 is an app you can use for online role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder or Starfinder. Both of which, or I should say all three of which, I'm sure will have tables at Origins Game Fair. And there's also a lot of exhibitors at Origins where you can just buy stuff from, games, pieces, t-shirts, anything gaming related you can find here. And also another one of my favorite events there is the paint and take, where you sign up and you get an unpainted miniature provided by Fragging Unicorn or Reaper Miniatures, and then you get to paint this and take it home. And it's a really awesome way to kind of just check out if you even want to paint miniatures, It's a great souvenir from Origins. I will say that it fills up really, really, real fast. If you're interested in doing it, I would say sign up as soon as you can. Unfortunately, the actual calendar of all the events doesn't officially get released until September 12th, and therefore we cannot share too many things with you right now. But as soon as it goes up, you should check out the site. It's originsgamefair.com as the website for the event.
What sorts of things are usually on Thursday? Asking because they've chosen to make that free this year, which is a nice mm-hmm. gesture. But what are they giving away exactly?
So Thursday, the first day, generally it's the event, but not everybody has arrived yet. Not all the exhibitors or board game
that sounds right
companies have arrived. So there's less programming as well, like less panels. But it, in every other way, it's just a smaller version of the main event.
Okay. There really is a perfect way to test it out for yourself.
Yeah, because understandably, you know, a lot of folks may be daunted by going to a huge event when we're still in a pandemic. Obviously, the Expo Center will be following the mask mandate for Columbus. So at least you don't have to worry about people walking around unmasked. And it's also a long stretch. Each day usually starts around 7, 8, 9, or 10 a.m. and goes until 1 in the morning in some of the game rooms. So.
And you have pro, like, official programming through that entire time, or just you have that's how long the space is open for.
That's how long the space is open. Because usually the official programs end the evening, and then you have, like, open gaming until the 1 a.m. So basically it's programs starting in the morning, going until the early evening, like 7 or 8 o'clock, and then after that it's all just gaming stuff. And since you asked about the Thursday, and the fact that it's free, the adult badges for Friday and Saturday only are $30 a piece, and the Sunday only badge is $15, because Sunday's shorter, and again, it's the last day, so there's less going on. A lot of vendors may have left already. There's less programming to see. So,
I know they're not comparable, but I'm a more regular Dragon Con attendee, and I say more regular, it's only been twice. But those prices just seem like such a steal to me.
Yeah. As somebody who's attended Gen Con, and I agree. Yeah, completely. I mean, I've attended other cons too, but Gen Con is probably the best, one of the best, examples of another con really similar to Origins. It is really, really reasonable. And it's been more expensive in the past too. And I think, again, part of this is because they want people to come out. But they acknowledge that everything going on makes people nervous to come out. So I feel like if they're more reasonably priced, then, you know, there's a good chance that people will decide to show up. And the last thing I'll mention on that note is that there's actually the virtual on Origins Online convention, which is an online convention, as I said, and its online attendee badges are $5. So that might be worth checking out as well if you can't come or you don't feel safe coming. And then, of course, there's also the volunteer shift option, which I'm doing on Saturday. I'm working for 4 hours on Saturday, and then I get in the rest of the convention free. Because if you work 4 hour shift, you get that day free. If you work 8 hours, you get 2 days free. You work more than that. And I give serious props to those tireless individuals who choose to work more than that. But it's a really nice way to... You still get to hang out and attend the convention while you're volunteering. So it's a good way to give back to this convention that has taken place here since 1975.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? How's that for impressive? So
46 years. Well, 45, because they had to miss one.
Yeah, true, but... yeah, a very long time. And I think that'll about wrap things up for us here.
Yeah.
Unless there was anything else you wanted to ask about Origins, or anything you felt like adding?
No, it really wasn't super on my radar. No, you had me like unofficially sign up recently, but I might have to think about it more seriously after we've been talking about it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think Thursday might be a perfect day for you to go check it out.
Yeah.
It's like, so yeah, and look for us at Origins. We'll probably have some Tiny Echo merchandise by then, maybe t-shirts at least, so you can see what we're about, and that'll take us out for the day. Stay positive, stay awesome, treat people well,
and we will see you next time.
Indeed. And our intro and outro music is provided to us by a local musician who goes by the name The Vale Minstrel. You can find their songs at valeminstrel.bandcamp.com.